Pseudopod, episode 181, February 12th, 2010. This week's story, Spirit of Nationalism, by Richard Marsden. Hello, welcome to Pseudopod, the weekly horror podcast. I'm Alistair, your host, and this week's story comes to us from Richard Marsden. Richard's been around these parts before, and has also had work in Chimera World and Dark Recesses. He's a Canadian who currently lives in Arizona, has 15 years' experience with the rapier, dabbles in economics, and holds a master's degree in land warfare from AMU. So if you're planning on cooking your company's books, fortifying the building, and challenging the only person to get into a duel, Richard will foil you. This story first appeared in Liquid Imagination magazine in September 2009, and is narrated for you by the ridiculously talented Mike Bennett. Check Mike out at mikebennettpodcast.com. But before that, make sure you have your tunic buttoned and your powder dry, because I have a story for you, and I promise you, it's true.
Spirit of Nationalism by Richard Marsden. The wind bit into his skin like daggers into flesh. The cold was like no other he had felt, and he knew it was only going to get worse, day by day. Never mind the night. Even people such as himself had to find shelter by night, or end up a victim of his own trade by dawn. Gregory's eyes panned out across the vast, empty, bleak Russian landscape. It reminded him of looking out to sea from the docks at Cherbourg, with its long piers and obstacle-strewn harbour to keep his enemies at bay. The steppes of Russia, much like the waters outside the port city. Here and there he could spy a single tree, or what looked to be a hill or solitary steeple. White land, white skies, and cold wind made Gregory curse him again. Why had they marched so far? What was the point of Borodino and the thousands dead they had to leave unburied, and only a week ago had to trample upon as they retreated? There was no point beyond the vainglorious visions of a man, of him. A groan redirected Gregory's thoughts. He looked at the makeshift path the Grand Army had carved through the snow. While Russia might be near featureless, his army was leaving behind plenty of markers. The snow had been trampled flat by thousands of cloth-wrapped boots. Unnecessary items littered the roadside and were lightly dusted by falling snow. As each frigid day passed, Gregory noted that what counted as unnecessary changed. At first, men tossed aside their hefty Charleville muskets and ammo. Next came their empty packs. After weeks of enduring cold, Cossacks, and the recent desertion by him, Gregory found gold and riches left along the winding, boot-trod path. Men were only keeping what was truly valuable in the wastes of Russia. Food, clothing, and tinder. The groan came to his ears once more. Peering through the frosty haze, Gregory saw a few toppled bodies, but they had already been well picked over. Some were naked, their forms having turned a particularly pale colour, giving them the appearance of marble statues, complete with open, sightless eyes. A bundled-up figure on the road moaned and tried to rise. Snow fell from him in torrents. Gregory licked his lips and instantly regretted it. The saliva froze as it experienced winter's chill and burnt his tender skin. Picking his way through the debris-laden path, Gregory approached the figure. His greatcoat was shabby, and he had lost his shako. His boots were in fine shape, and Gregory eyed his wool gloves with covetous intent. As he neared the rising figure, Gregory reached a hand out and braced it under the man's arm.
"Let me help you, friend," he croaked, unused to using his voice.
The man stiffened and turned. His face was weather-beaten, his moustache was laced with frost, and from his nostrils miniature icicles dangled. His eyes widened and he shrugged off Gregory.
"Vulture," the Frenchman gasped.
He wished he was a vulture. A vulture could fly in and pick the best morsels. He was more akin to a lone wolf, picking off the weak of a herd. Never mind that it was his own kind he preyed upon. He was no murderer, however. Not yet. He stepped back and raised his hands. Several wedding bands glittered on his fingers, and several strips of cloth, nominally used as bandages, were wrapped about his palms.
"I'm unarmed," said Gregory, "and only came to help."
Not entirely true. He came to see how far gone the man was. Judging by the ice forming on his face, he didn't have long. The man sneered. He took a few steps past Gregory and nearly fell. Before assistance could be offered, he flailed his hands around and trudged another step. His greatcoat was ratty and bore powder burns. He may be unarmed, but not long ago the man had seen some fighting. Just beneath his eye, Gregory noticed telltale black marks. To the east, the way the Grand Army had retreated, a crackling burst of musketry echoed. The cold wind had a way of carrying sounds far. There was no telling how far away or how close the gunplay was. Gregory peered down the path, but the barren landscape revealed nothing. He doubted he would be able to see the white smoke of a musket anyway.
"Someone is still putting up a fight," he said.
The musketry continued to crackle methodically. The stumbling Frenchman looked over his shoulder.
"Nay, bravest of the brave, he fights on as the Emperor would wish."
The man wrapped his coat tighter about his body and gazed in the direction of the sound.
"I should be with him."
Gregory cautiously approached his victim. He smiled lightly and jerked his head.
"Then walk that way." "I am wounded. He said my musket and ammo were better off with the able."
A wry smile came to the man's face.
"I agreed, and gave him my food and tinder pack as well."
Gregory frowned at the news. The man laughed instantly.
"The vulture will get little from me. Pick over the others."
"I have, and today's pickings have been slim, friend. You have nothing? Not even a tiny morsel?"
A suspicion came over Gregory.
"You stumble like a wounded man, but where is your wound? Where is the blood?"
The man grunted and shook his head.
"The cold has sealed me."
He opened his coat, revealing the uniform of an Imperial Guardsman, and on his left breast, a blackened hole. Blood, dried and turned rust-red, spattered the blue and white of his once imperious tunic, but nothing fresh leaked.
"You will not live long."
Gregory tucked his hands into his coat and glanced at the dim sun. They didn't have long until the deathly night arrived. He had found no wood to burn, and only a small tin of food. There were some scraps of cloth he could burn at night, but such wouldn't last long, and he was loath to cast to the fire that which he could later wear.
"How about help a soldier out? Give me what you have."
"Soldier?"
The man spat, but nothing came out.
"Brave Ney fights the Russians. The Grand Army wades through Cossacks, defending Frenchmen, women and children."
"And their loot,"
Gregory added.
"You are no soldier. You and yours. You think I've not seen your type before. Like ghosts, you wander the field of battle, clad in the uniform of a friend, but you bring death as surely as a musket ball.
He stumbled a few more steps, following the trail left in the wake of the army's retreat.
Coward, he muttered.
He would agree with almost everything the guardsman had said, save one.
I'm no coward.
He fell in alongside the old fool.
I marched with him, fought for him, killed for him. I was there at Austerlitz. I was there at Jena. I was...
Where are you now?
The man roared, and his pale eyes flickered with life. Gregory replied smoothly.
Where is he?
Saving France!
The man staggered on. He walked in silence, his pace ragged and uneven.
If you are no coward, why are you here, vulture?
The matter was an easy one in Gregory's mind.
He left me. The signal is clear. Each man for himself. I am far less a criminal than he is.
Gregory kept an easy pace alongside the wounded man.
I pick over the dead. He left the living behind to die, my friend.
He put himself on a higher moral plane than your usual looter. He hadn't killed a fellow Frenchman, not directly at least, no worse than him. Gregory took what he needed from those who no longer needed anything, or were close enough to death, that the removal of their belongings changed their fate very little, while vastly improving his own.
You justify your actions, vulture.
The man glared at him.
I prove my actions. I could kill you now. I could slit your throat or use the pistol in my belt to put an end to you.
Gregory said.
But instead, I march alongside you, my friend.
A grunt left the guardsman.
Waiting for me to die.
Or live.
He was no coward. He had stood proudly in the firing line time and again. The idea that one of his favoured pets could cast doubt on Gregory was grating. He was a survivor who had simply woken up to the fact that France's master was no god, but like him, just a man with faults and weaknesses and a streak of cowardice. He had left his beloved army behind in the grip of Russia's winter. Gregory still marched with it, in a sense.
I will make it clear to you, my friend. So long as you walk, I will walk with you. Come night, we will find shelter together, and together we will make a fire.
He raised his hand.
Ah, but if you fall, just once, then I will mark you as dead, and take what the dead don't need.
He extended his hand.
Agreed?
The guardsman tilted his head. He glanced up a moment as if in contemplation. His gloved hand grasped Gregory's. It was cold as the snow they slogged through.
Agreed, he said. If I fall, you can feast. If I do not, then you will march where I march. You will follow.
He released his grip and tottered to the side of the path. He bent over and rooted through the snow. A musket was plucked forth, and he used it as a brace. A smile flashed across his pale features.
Do you have spare powder and shot, vulture?
He had, in fact, only one shot in his pistol, and nothing more.
None, my friend. What do you need with a musket, anyway?
He looked around and wandered over to a clump of snow-coated bodies. He expertly began to search them for powder packets.
I give up my arms to my comrades. But if you are true to your word, then we are soldiers again. I am no invalid, and you, vulture, are no scavenger.
He palmed a few items from the snow.
Soldiers carry arms.
I'm not a soldier anymore,
Gregory replied. They spent a few minutes procuring powder and shot. Gregory surrendered what he saw as unnecessary weight to the guardsman. If he wanted to walk about, wounded, with a hefty musket and its accoutrements, then let him. They moved at a sluggish pace, and as the sun crept along the horizon, shielded by low-hanging clouds, the sound of musketry ceased.
"I hope we won,"
the guardsman muttered, staring to the east with narrowed eyes before staggering westward. To the west, the Grand Army marched, racing for the safety of the Duchy of Warsaw. Gregory doubted the guardsman would make it to nightfall, let alone Poland. He was wrong. The sun moved across the sky, and the greyed-out light started to darken and give way to night. The winter weather intensified with each passing moment of daylight. Despite the cold, the guardsmen stumbled along the path. They passed an abandoned wagon. All the horses of the army had long ago been eaten, and Gregory imagined that men had been used in their stead to haul the wagon. There were some supplies left within, as well as stolen jewellery, a few paintings, their frames missing, and other luxuries that would have fetched quite a price in Paris, but in Russia couldn't be eaten or burned, and so were worthless. The wagon was made of wood, but after a few half-hearted tries, Gregory was unable to strip anything away or free the wheels so as to consign them to flames later on. The guardsman walked without speaking to Gregory. At times he would grumble, but he did not falter in his forward momentum. His musket, doubling as a cane, gave his tracks an odd, three-legged appearance. His pace was agonizingly slow, but as the sun sank, it picked up. Like a bird, Gregory flitted from corpse to corpse, debris pile to debris pile. His bejeweled fingers dug through the litter of the army, but there was nothing to be had. No food, and worse, no wood and precious little cloth to burn. The sky was getting darker, and worry seeped into his bones as well as the increasing cold. He looked at the guardsman. The man had no interest in scavenging. With ammo and musket secured, he had what he wanted. He marched awkwardly, but continually.
"We need shelter, firewood. You could help, you know,"
Gregory said to the back of the guardsman. The guardsman did not turn, but said,
"The deal was that you would follow so long as I did not fall. I am not falling."
He shouldered his musket, teetered a moment, and fell into a rhythmic march. His tracks were less curious without the cane.
"You'll break up on your wound or trip."
Gregory jogged after him.
"Not that I should care. Your fall means my gain."
He stared at him as he fell alongside. Frost coated the guardsman's face like a layer of wax. His eyes were fixed on the road ahead, and his boots crunched in the hard-packed snow.
"You'll tire."
He looked towards the setting sun. It had sunk low enough that it acted as a beacon. To the west, the sun. To the east, darkness and bitter cold.
"I feel stronger. You give me purpose again, Vulture."
He strode ahead.
"If not for you, I would turn and fight with Ney."
He smiled, and his crusty yellow teeth flashed a horrid smile.
"Maybe, if you are lucky, come night I will fall, and you will have your reward."
Gregory wrapped his arms tightly about himself. He shook his head.
"Crazy, all you guardsmen are. You live and die for him, he who left you behind."
"He who waits for his army to return."
He tilted his head.
"If you manage to make it out of Russia, where will you go?"
"Back to France,"
Gregory answered instantly. Where else would he go? He wasn't running away from battle. He was running to France and home, where spring and summer were warm and De Winter wasn't a death sentence. The guardsman nodded.
And when you are back in France, then what?
He smiled.
Desert?
Gregory frowned and shook his head. He said he wasn't a soldier, but he didn't mean it like that.
No, I told you, I'm no coward. Just like your master, I'm trying to survive. He did it by fleeing back home. I do it by taking what is not needed from the dead.
Gregory sighed.
Oh, not that it matters. I believe other vultures have picked over this path too well. The sun sets.
He glanced towards the fading orb.
And we have nothing to start a decent fire with.
The guardsman nodded.
Then we march.
He plodded through the snow.
We'll freeze. You must help me find wood. We can't survive the night.
The guardsman paused. His eyes had taken on a pale appearance, much like his skin.
Then we march, he repeated to himself. I have a musket ball in me, and I march. You can do the same, vulture. That is the deal.
He strode away. With little choice, Gregory followed. He saw his breath flow in steamy contrails into the darkening sky. He fixed his eyes on the guardsman's back. Momentarily, he thought of drawing his pistol and ending it there. He could burn whatever he found. His hand strayed to his belt, but he clenched his fist, ignoring the pain that it caused him. He was no coward. He had been tempted to murder, but had not crossed that line. He wouldn't. The sun was soon gone, and darkness spilled across the land. The endless plain of white became an ocean of black. No stars could be seen above, and the moon's silvery rays barely penetrated the clouds. Gregory followed in the footsteps of the guardsman. He felt warmth spreading up his legs, and worry etched into his mind. He had heard of men, moments before succumbing to the cold, speaking of a relaxing warmth. He prayed that what he felt was just the burning of his muscles from keeping up an ever-quickening pace. The soldier in front of him marched steadily, his limp gone, replaced by a purposeful stride. Perhaps just as a man felt warmth before winter claimed him, the guardsman felt renewed strength before his frozen wound brought him down. The steps became harder to take. The warmth had not left his legs, but rather had filled up into his hips and chest. He could no longer feel his toes or his fingers. Gregory wiggled them within the confines of his coat, hoping to get back some sensation. When the wind howled across the steps, he shuddered, and even the sinister warmth inside his body fled, replaced by deathly cold. He breathed harder and tried to pick up the pace. Cursing, he stomped along the path, glancing up at times to see the implacable guardsman a few paces ahead. The man was impossible. Colder still, and the night was young. The wind whistled fiercely, and the chill that had consumed his fingers and toes grasped onto his legs. He couldn't feel them, and only dumbly did he walk. His breathing was laboured. He was freezing to death. The damn guardsman was marching them to their doom. He should have burnt the wagon or searched the numerous piles and mounds of snow they passed rather than walking in the dark when Russia's revenge was at its peak. His body shook. It was not shivers. Shivering was something he had ceased to do weeks ago. The cold was too strong for even that natural action. No, this shuddering was different. His body was giving out. Panic seized him. Warmth, fire, heat. He needed these things, but there was nothing. Gregory paused, leaned back, and stared into the night sky and sighed. He was going to be another marker on the path. He fell backwards. A gloved hand grabbed his arm in a vice-like grip. He felt a violent jerk and was pulled close to the frigid body of the guardsman. The man whispered,
"Are you a coward?"
He shook his head.
"You damn fool! We will freeze! We should have found shelter! I should have..."
The guardsman shook him violently.
"Should have what?"
Gregory's thoughts were muddled. He wanted to lie down, to let the last bit of unnatural warmth secure his body and let death come. He had seen it before, men lying down as if to sleep in a blanket of snow. He slumped, but the guardsman hauled him upright. A slap struck his cheek, and he blinked as pain momentarily flared.
Should have surrendered to the Russians. Deserted. Killed you.
The voice in his ear was fierce.
But you didn't, Volcha. Something was in you stopped it.
He walked and dragged Gregory with him, as if hauling a petulant child.
Austerlitz!
Unwilling, Gregory tottered behind the guardsman. Why the man would bring up the glorious battle of 1805 was beyond him.
What?
He managed. The guardsman whirled. In the faded, obscured moonlight, his features glowed and his lips peeled back.
You said you were there, were you?
Yes,
he wheezed. The snow beckoned him. All he had to do was lie down and shut his eyes, but the guardsman wouldn't let him be.
Where were you?
When Gregory didn't instantly answer, the man shouted,
Where?
His memories came to him. Austerlitz. It was cold that day, too. Gregory had been placed on the left under the command of Lon. They had faced down the Russians then as well.
The left! I was on the left!
The guardsman wrapped an arm around him, denying him the embrace of snow and death. The soldier's musket remained propped against his shoulder, and he nodded.
Then you remember. You were alone. He was gone. He had left you.
He had. But that was different, Gregory thought. The Emperor had placed them on a hill with a promise to return, to save them when things would be at their darkest. And on that day, he had done just that. When the Russians were swirling around their position, when Lon was waving his broken saber, and it seemed the end of glory was upon them, he had come. Gregory smiled at the memory of happier times, of defeat transformed into triumph.
Ah, you remember, he came. I was there too, Vulture. I stood in the center, ranked up with the Emperor's best. We smiled down upon you as you held the enemy at bay, fighting for your lives with faith in us and him. Remember?
He did.
The sun,
he gasped.
The sun was rising, and your shadows cast upon the ground. You are all so tall.
The Russians and Austrians saw it too. They saw the immortals, and they fled. We had come, and with us...
He trailed off.
Him,
Gregory finished. He remembered the sight of the grey coat, the broad bicorn hat. The Emperor rode along the Pratzen Heights as the guardsmen carried the day. Impending defeat had become a glory like no other. The Emperor had saved them. Gregory felt a wave of guilt. He had preyed on men who had been there on that auspicious day. He had, like a vulture, waited for the guardsman to die. He shook his head.
I'm sorry. You are better soldiers than I.
He forced himself to keep walking, trying to fend off the desire to sleep forever. Gregory's head drooped and he stumbled.
But I will march with the guardsman and die with him.
He would die. The night was upon them, and the merciless grip of winter would crush them both. Not even fond memories of past battles or newfound faith in the Emperor would prevent that. Gregory sighed. It wasn't so bad. He would die a soldier.
Look up.
Gregory felt the guardsman release him. Still, he marched forward.
Look up, soldier,
the man said from behind him. Wearily, Gregory looked up.
Light. He could see a cluster of campfires and hear voices carrying on the crisp air. The Grand Army. There was not much left of it, but there was enough. Enough for one more soldier.
We are saved. You are, the guardsman agreed.
Gregory turned to look at his saviour. Soft light illuminated his pale form. Slowly, the guardsman removed his coat and tossed it to Gregory.
Take this, he said, as a reminder. Remember, he has not left you. He is waiting for you. The days of glory will end one day. But not today, soldier.
Catching the heavy cloth, Gregory nodded.
Yes, you have reminded me. I almost forgot myself out there. Come, friend, to the warmth of the Grand Army.
The guardsman shook his head.
No, you will go. You will warm your bones and march again. I must go back to the others.
He turned around and walked away. A gasp fled Gregory's dry lips. He leapt back and clutched his chest. He had seen the wound on the guardsman's chest, but now, without his coat on, he could see the grievous damage to his back. He could see splintered bones, a gaping hole, and far too much dried blood for any man to have lost and still live. He watched, mouth agape, as the figure trudged back into the featureless snow and darkness. Within moments, he was gone. From the darkness, the guardsman called out,
"Long live the Emperor!"
Blinking, Gregory stepped back. He walked towards the firelight and the comrades whom he had so nearly lost.
"Long live Napoleon!" he whispered.
History is a vast machine driven by a billion tiny cogs. Change one cog, move one thing out of alignment, and the machine will run faster, or slower, or not at all. History isn't personal, and it's nothing but personal. A precisely ordered pyramid of chaos that we can all affect without ever knowing how, or meaning to, or wanting to. History's great. The only problem is, how do we even begin to understand it? How do we ever hope to understand the world and our place in it? It's simple. You pick a spot, you pick a perspective, you stick a pin in the map and you say, I am here. What else can you do? Do that with anyone, any time period, anywhere, and you'll find something fascinating and odd and human. Two examples. The morning before the D-Day assault, Captain Richard Winters of the 101st Airborne agreed to wrestle a colleague to relieve the boredom. Winters' colleague broke his collarbone and sat the assault out. Winters, having made sure his friend was okay, found a line of men waiting for him, half-jokingly wanting the same treatment. Then there's Andreas Vesalius, a 14th century physician and author of On the Workings of the Human Body, the man referred to by many as the founder of modern anatomy and by me as Andreas Vesalius, two-fisted medical man. Reasons I don't write medical books. An occasional series. In 1541, he discovered that Galen's Opera Omnia, the definitive medical text of his time, was based on the dissection of Barbary apes rather than humans. This was akin to discovering that Grey's Anatomy, the book, not the show, was based on the dissection of pigs. It provided absolute proof that one of the cornerstones of medicine, a book people had been taught from for generations, was dangerously wrong. So he published a correction and began work on his own anatomical text. He stood up to accepted wisdom and had the courage to correct it, the courage to go, no, you got that wrong. The wisdom and bravery of that choice forms a cornerstone of modern medicine, even today. So, history isn't just made up of faceless cogs. It's made up of normal people who make extraordinary choices, people who change the world with nothing more than a decision, a step, a word. History is humanity writ large and small, a canvas we all paint on and never have the luxury of seeing in its entirety. Richard's story shows us a brief glimpse of a different part of the picture, shows us what the picture looks like when it's painted in blood, and shows us the humanity present, even then, even beyond death. Because in the end, that's all history is. Humanity. Us. All of us. Together. Pseudopod is powered by your donations, so if you liked this story, please go to pseudopod.org and click on Feed the Pod. Each donation helps pay authors, cover server costs, and ensures that we can keep taking trips to the other side of the street. Pseudopod is a production of Escape Artists Incorporated, and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License. And Pseudopod has heard the great lie. Join us next week as Jim Baillet returns to Pseudopod with The Dreaming Way.